I love scotch. 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 Scotch.
Yep. Have another whiskey.
If you'd like to speak to me in person, press 1. If you'd like to order drugs, press hash.
I had a gentleman in the crowd that was like, tell me how to drink Glenfiddich. And I was like, I will not do that.
Yep.
You drink Glenfiddich how you want to drink Glenfiddich.
Wear a cowboy hat in Los Angeles and look at the amount of looks you get.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. This is the most flamboyant city on earth. You wear a cowboy hat, people look at you like you are like an alien.
The Beatles came on and my mate picked me up on his shoulder. George Harrison is as close to me as that wall now. I went, all right, George, all right. And he went, cough. And that was the closest I ever came to the Beatles.
We have a whiskey while we...
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cheers, long.
Cheers. So welcome back to United States of Dramerica. And this week we have aspiring professional golfer with an interesting story after a tough year. Welcome to the podcast, Will Leaf.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
So how do we start this? So we met a couple of years ago. I was very excited because you were an excellent golfer about to go out on tour. And I was very excited about coming to watch you play and hearing your stories. Then this global pandemic hit and things have changed a lot. So just before we get into what you're doing next, tell me about what you were going to do and then what the 12 months have been like.
Yeah, so right when we met, I was gearing up to start my path, you know, the goal to make it to the PGA Tour. I was planning to go in May to start the PGA Tour Canada. And obviously a couple months before that, things slowly started shutting down. NCAA basketball tournament, and then the Masters was canceled or moved back. And then we got the message that, you know, we're done. We're not playing, no PGA Tour Canada. The borders closed. So after taking about 12 months before that to get ready for the season, a mental switch goes and we're trying to figure out what I'm going to do other than playing there. It's just kind of a scramble to figure out. And as we all know, everyone, with this global pandemic, as soon as it happened, there wasn't much of an alternative plan there. So I went into a little bit of a panic mode, like many did, and sat there and tried to reach out to all tours and see what their plans were. And no one knew. No one knew what we were going to be doing. And now I'm sitting here and finally tours and everything are going back to normal, at least as close as they can, and looking to pick it back up. But feels very, very weird to be out of competition like that for a while, especially when you're geared up mentally to get into it heavy.
So how much golf have you played in the last 12 months?
In the last 12 months... Not enough. Last summer I played a little bit, but I would say it's the least I've played in probably my life and career, to be honest with you. And we can get into that, but it's very interesting at this point in time in my career. It's not so much a bad thing now that we're coming out of it.
So part of the reason I've invited you on, apart from, actually, let's have a whiskey. Let's get the whiskey
out
of the way, because first time we met, we were drinking whiskey together, so we should drink another whiskey. We were drinking. Actually, last time I saw you would have been at Salt Lake City Airport. You were flying home to Minnesota, and I was flying home to Los Angeles, and we were drinking proper number 12.
Yes,
as I remember, which for some reason they sold at Salt Lake City Airport. Anyway, so what whiskey have you got in with you in Minnesota?
Right now, I got a small batch of 1792.
Very good.
It's a Kentucky bourbon whiskey. What about you?
So I've been drinking mostly scotch on the podcast, and I was thinking, as always, I need to try and pick a whiskey that's appropriate for the guest. And I thought very hard about this, and then I decided that the whiskey podcast where we're talking about golf, I'll pick an appropriate whiskey. So I've got a bottle of Eagle Rare single barrel.
Oh yeah.
So obviously Eagle for golf. Hopefully for you, eagles aren't that rare, but certainly for me, they're so rare I've actually never had one, apart from in a scramble.
Anyway,
so I'm on Eagle Rare. So actually, just not that this is to do with anything, but I love asking golfers this. How many holes in one have you had?
okay. So this is where I'll be a little bit unique. I have three, ooh, but only one is on a par three. So I have two on par fours. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, that it is very, very weird, right? So both of them were hole 13 on two different separate courses, both 318 yards. And yeah, somehow just those two. It's pretty, that's kind of my, that's my rare little unique thing.
Yeah, yeah. So did they sort of just trickle in, or did these ones that sort of bounce, hit the flag, go up in the air and then land in the hole?
So I have no idea. I didn't see it. The first one was blind. I hit it over, cut a corner over the trees. It was the course I grew up playing, but then the other one was in Arizona and I hit it over a wash, but it was kind of back into the sun. So I didn't actually see it both on both of them. I was actually looking around the green for my ball for like 4 minutes. And then, kind of out of desperation, a lot of golfers that are listening know when you can't find it and you always go, well, I'll just check the hole just to make sure. Right. And those two times it was actually in the hole and my heart dropped. Cause it's just like, no way. You know,
extraordinary. And
yeah,
none of these were in competition. These are all just friendly rounds of golf.
My first one on a par three was in competition. Yes, was when I was a junior golfer. I hit it, and it's an uphill par three, so I couldn't see that one either. But I heard it because I dunked it. It went just in. It didn't bounce or anything, and I heard just a huge whack. And I was like, oh damn, probably hit the flag and went off the green or something, but the people up there behind the green ended up putting their hands up. And I was like, okay. I was playing horrible though. I was playing horrible.
So obviously I've never had a hole in one. I asked, some of my friends are good golfers and have had maybe one each, but sure. I've never met anyone who's had three, and I've never met anyone who've had two on par fours. That's extraordinary.
Very good. I forget what it is, but someone looked up the odds on that and it was, wish I would have had a lottery ticket instead.
Yeah, indeed. So actually, given that you have a propensity to hit hole-in-ones, now's a good chance to talk about the Invest in Will Leaf scheme, which is what this sort of this podcast is about in a way. So I got an email from you the other day, very politely written, saying, I'm relaunching myself in a post-COVID world. Do you want to basically buy shares in me in exchange for my future earnings? Now, obviously, you're not the first golfer to ever do this, but you're the first one who I know well enough to invite on my podcast. So tell me about the thinking behind this and what made you decide to do it and how to work out the logistics of it all.
Sure. Yeah. So I think the first thing, I come from a small town in Minnesota. That's where I'm born and raised, where, asking for money or dealing with money to go play golf is, I'll be honest, it's a very uncomfortable thing to do, right? No one wants to do that. But I wanted to, after this global pandemic, the sponsors and people I had prior, it just fizzled out, with the uncertainties and everything and with the pandemic, people didn't really, they weren't worried about that, understandably. So I decided to, reach out to people closer to me, keep it personal. And I wanted to think of it more so as building a team where if I have success, everyone benefits from it. Nothing would make me happier than at the end of the year, sending people checks and thank you notes. So for me, I just started to reach out to personal contacts and people I know in the golf industry and that, I've enjoyed being around. And selling shares for myself at $1,000 a piece. And with that, my goal is to get to 35,000. And that takes care of, flights, hotels, entry fees. And that gets me a full season and into Q school at the end of the year. And that being said, it's kind of a motto, if I win, you win type thing, where I get out there and play well. And hopefully, people are watching and trying to build that team aspect, right? Keeping in touch with people and bringing success to them as well.
So there's a couple of players who are, household names who did a version of this when they were younger. So tell us about those, because you would have looked into this at some length. So tell me about their stories.
Yeah. So Zach Johnson's the one that sticks out to me, especially because he's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He went and played college golf at Drake. I think he was like the four man there. And Drake's not historically a great college golf school. So he does that, but you know, he continues to improve each year, right? And goes and finds some people that are willing to back him and sell shares of himself. And well, then kind of history tells itself, being a two-time major champion and playing on Ryder Cup teams and all that. I think that's pretty cool to think back. It'd be interesting to see what those conversations are like with his original investors when he was selling shares, when he was probably uncomfortable going to ask people for some money. And now, you know, he's been assistant captains with Tiger Woods, you know, Royal Melbourne in Australia. He's had some pretty cool experiences in golf, started from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how that works in terms of the payout. So I assume at some point the original investors were paid out and it stopped. Otherwise, yeah, they'd be getting checks for millions, presumably.
Yeah, right, right. I think they're doing okay for, I'm sure, what they invested in him. And they probably had a blast doing it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm sure. So, I mean, it's a weird thing. Obviously, I'm British. So if I wanted to do this, I just could never get past the asking people for money stage, because we're not very good at that sort of thing. See, Americans are a bit more comfortable with that. But still, it must be a weird thing for you to say to people, hey, you know, can you, it's not even like, can you lend me some money? It's like, do you want to invest in not this share that I'm tipping or you know, get some Bitcoin? It's, do you want to invest in me and my chances of, you know, getting two holes in one on par fours?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, I mean, it is very uncomfortable, but, you know, it's one of those things that, I said earlier in the podcast that, you know, not playing as much golf in the last 12 months wasn't a bad thing. I was able to put a lot of time and effort into some things I don't usually get to, you know, in the gym and mentally learning how to, you know, when you take away golf, that's something you do that keeps you moving forward all the time. It's a good time to kind of reflect on yourself, see what you could do better moving forward. And, it's allowed me that work to feel a little bit more confident going to people and asking for money, because I believe something good's coming in the next couple of years, within the next couple of years for me. So it's, you know, I think it's hard to ask when you don't think you've put in the work or you don't feel ready. But you know, that I have started playing a little bit more here since the new year. I went to Arizona, played an event, played really nice. And, you know, that was something where I'm like, awesome, this off-season work, I feel good. Came home and I actually met with my coach, Scott Hamilton. He's in Georgia. He coaches a lot of PGA Tour players. And he has the most PGA Tour players that he coaches out of anyone. And, you know, he said something to me. He's like, just please don't stop playing, you know? That's what he said. He said, please don't stop playing. Like you're hitting a point right now where you're in stride. And funny thing in my head was like, well, I don't feel like I've really even started yet. He's saying, don't stop. And that's where I came home and I'm like, I got to figure this out. You know, I got to get the money to be able to play. So it's uncomfortable, but you know, when you have a dream and you want to do it, you got to kind of get past that. And the worst thing that someone can say is no, and you move on.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you get the 35,000, are you just going to go and buy a load of protein shakes and heavy weights and try and become the new Bryson?
Bryson, I mean, I might as well at this point. Everyone else is trying to do it. Rory had an interesting interview the other day. He was admitting that he was chasing some new speed, and it's kind of been, didn't benefit the rest of his game. So it kind of puts more credit to Bryson, how well he's doing with it. You know, a guy so talented like Rory had a little tough time.
So, you know, if you do get the money, that pays your flights and your hotels for a summer of golf. So obviously you think that this is something that you should do. Your coach thinks it is. If the year goes badly, so I'm going to ask two questions here, but we'll start with the negative one first, because we've got to ask one. So if it goes badly, it is entirely possible that even if you play well, you could make zero money, because it's very competitive.
Absolutely.
How do you deal with potentially going back to people and saying, yeah, thank you for your investment, you made zero money?
Right. It is hard. Obviously, of course, that's something I've thought of. You can't hide from that reality, right? But what you do is, you know, in this first year, that amount of time, I believe that, you know, I will get comfortable out there. I will. I've done the work. I'm ready to do it. Yes. If you make $0 on the mini tours, there's a lot of different perspective to it. Right. So I'll try to explain it this way. There's some people that can play on the mini tours that can't play on the PGA tour. There's some people that don't play as well on the mini tours that have a game for the PGA tour. And some would be like, that doesn't make much sense. Right. Well, when you're playing really hard golf courses, and it's not just a putting contest, that's what the mini tours is. It's a putting contest, you know, go as low as you can. You're going 100 miles per hour. You're going as hard as you can the whole time. Where when you watch the Players Championship this past weekend, right? It's more methodical. It's more about consistency. You're penalized for bad shots, where on the mini tours, you can get away with it. You know, you can get away with being a little sloppy as long as you make a bunch of putts. So I know some people that have not had tremendous success on the mini tours, but then they've Monday qualified in on the PGA tour and they've snowballed that. They're actually better at making cuts on the PGA tour at 2 under par than they were on the mini tours, where cuts are sometimes 6 under. So if you're, does that make any sense? Or is that, it's just a different style of play. Like Tiger Woods, when you don't know, he might not be that good on the mini tours because he won a lot of golf tournaments on hard golf courses.
Yeah. No, it does make sense. It does. Cause I know like in soccer, there's certain players who can play in the Premier League, but can't play two leagues below because it's a different game at that. You know, and or you know, they can play in Italy or Spain, but they can't make it in the Premier League. So it's just a different sport. So because I have some experience of not of being good at golf, I have no experience of that. But in my old sports journalism days, I remember covering a player when I was working for a newspaper in Bermuda who was doing the summer tours. I think it was called the Hooters Tour.
That's the Swing Thought. That's the Swing Thought Tour now. Used to be the Hooters Tour.
I imagine Hooters probably aren't allowed to sponsor things that people want to play in today's world. Anyway, I remember the whole thing was fascinating because you're always very close to making something happen because of the way the momentum works. So you play well in the right tournament and then you get an entry into another tournament. Or you do well in one thing and then it gets you the following week can get you into something. And so you're always potentially, you know, 2 or 3 rounds away from not necessarily, you know, fame and fortune and becoming the world number one. But you can, like I say, if you have a good Monday, you could end up playing in a PGA Tour event. And you get all these, I always used to find it fascinating, you know, when he'd finish in a certain position, because obviously there's the prize money, but then there's also all sorts of other things. You know, you skip one round of this, or you get an entry into this, status for that. So it's a really, it's actually very complicated. It's like a big algorithm.
It is. There's no one way to get there, right? And people take such unique ways. To your point, the Monday, there's a guy right now named Will Zalatoris that I think he's top 10 in like 6 of his last 8 events on tour. But he doesn't actually have status on the PGA Tour, but he's playing like one of the best in the world right now. You know, he's on the Korn Ferry Tour, but he's spending all of his time. He's on the Korn Ferry Tour from a status perspective, right? But he's playing out on the PGA Tour because he Mondayed in and then he continued to play well and he's made money. And now he's made enough money where he's going to have status next year. But technically, he doesn't have status on the PGA Tour, but he's contending all the time. Like he was like top 15 again in the Players this week. You know, and it's like, that's very interesting concept of being one of the best players in the world right now, but not actually being considered on the PGA Tour.
So if we look at the mini tours, so if somebody was buying a share in you, you know, there's a formula for how you get paid out. But just to give people a sense, so the Swing Putt Tour, which is rightly known for the Hooters Tour. I've got nothing against Hooters. I spent a lot of time in Hooters as a youngster, but I just draw wood now. Anyway, the Swing Putt Tour. If you finish in the top 10 on a mid-size event in the Swing Putt Tour, what sort of prize money are we looking at this year?
If you're finishing in the top 10, you know, you're finishing, winners usually get around, you know, 35,000. It's mini tours are very top heavy. I'd say 10th place is walking away with a profit of let's just say $1,000. Pay $1,000 to play, you're probably walking away with $1,000. You know, let's say, and in a mid-size mini tour event, you probably got 50 guys only, but they're very top heavy. You know, winning your guy that led the All Pro Tour made over $100,000, you know, but guy finishing 50th isn't going to make much. We're on the tour, you still make some money.
But then, so you're going to play in these events on the, on the mini tours. But then you'll also do Monday qualifying for PJ. Is there Monday qualifying for Korn Ferry events, or do they not do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be doing that. I'll be doing a lot of those as well. So a lot of the mini tours actually follow where the Mondays will be for the Korn Ferry. So you'll go play in, you know, Texas or something, and the Monday after you'll have a Monday qualifier for that event. So there's a lot of golf that's being played. So, but the benefit of that is riding momentum, like you said earlier, you right playing well at the right time. Let's say you could play poorly in the first two rounds of a mini tour event, find something on the last round of your event, head over a day later, go Monday in, and it's all about timing. You know, sure you didn't make much money in the mini tour event, right? But now you're pegging it on the Korn Ferry the next week, playing for a big check. So it's like, that's the importance of having the money, why I'm doing the investment opportunity, is because that allows time to get those weeks to build that momentum, right? Because it really only takes one. If I raise $35,000 and I win one event, I mean, you're making 35 back right there, you know. It's, but then if you get out on the Korn Ferry Tour and you finish well once, now you're playing another week, you're playing another week, and now you're moving in the right direction where people are going to be happy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because it's a funny world. And I remember, again, from my journalism days, not just the golfer, but also talking to people who sort of ranked sort of 200 in the world at tennis. Yep. And, you know, it's a weird world of rather crappy hotel rooms and driving with five of your friends in a rental car because it's cheaper than flying and all that sort of stuff. That's not easy because you're out there performing, but the night before you know, how many of them will be sharing in a room to save money, but it's a tough life. Are you, like, mentally you're ready for sort of crap hotel rooms in the middle of nowhere and all that stuff?
Yeah. You know, at this point in time, I'm actually kind of excited for it. I think that makes it all the better. There's so many good stories out there. People sleeping in their cars, people driving from, you know, playing, driving 14 hours and then going, pegging it in a Monday qualifier and getting through. Like, that is so cool. You know, there's not many sports where you live that type of lifestyle and you're trying to make it out on the PJ Tour. It's so self-earned. You know what I mean? It's all about grit and perseverance. And those guys that make it, like Zach Johnson, I feel like they get out on the PJ Tour and they do actually believe it's their time because of, I did sleep in my car to get here. I should be here. You know, there was no big contract they signed. It was just purely they played their way onto the tour and lived horribly doing it.
Obviously, again, as a college athlete, when you're at you know, a good college, you're obviously traveling to play other colleges. Is that done sort of cut price, terrible hotels, long road trips, or is that actually quite nice? And now you're on your own, you're taking a big step down.
That's luxury. That is luxury. College golf is, you're staying in resorts, you're eating great dinners, not on your dime. All that, you're playing the best golf courses that are ran so well. And then all of a sudden it's just a shock to the system when you show up at sometimes public muni golf course, you know? And it's like, but the thing is it doesn't change why you're there. Right. And that kind of goes back to my point about some people can play those, and, you know, some are better on the PGA Tour, but it doesn't matter because you still have to figure that aspect out, you know? And that's the point of playing a full season, is to learn that vibe, to know what you kind of need to be doing out there. But it's a lot different. It's weird going from college. You're spoiled in college. You get a bunch of free stuff all the time. And all of a sudden now you're sleeping as Super 8 and you're with three other people.
Extraordinary. Because obviously there's a point, obviously sponsorship is a big part of golf. Mm-hmm. And actually I was watching the end of the Players Championship today, and after Justin Thomas won, when he went to hug his dad, I'm sure his dad was paid. It feels like his dad was paid to wear those clothes. Like there was a lot of logos on his polo shirt and hat, and that didn't feel like a coincidence. So I love the fact that even families are sponsored now. At your level, is anyone, you know, giving you money to wear a baseball cap and a logo on a polo shirt, or does that kick in at Korn Ferry and above?
It gets heavy in a Korn Ferry and above. I've got a couple of people that want me to wear logos. I'm more than happy to wear logos, put stuff on my bag. I would love to, you know, but that becomes, as soon as you're starting to get onto the Korn Ferry tour, companies want to scoop you up. You know, think about it. I mean, all those guys are essentially interviewing for the PGA tour, right? And it's not going to hurt many companies to go throw their logo on these bags in case it's the next Justin Thomas, right? So might as well grab them early and give them their interview shot.
Yeah. So theoretically, if I and maybe a couple of my friends who are also listeners to this podcast were to club together to buy one of the shares available, could you be out there playing in your tournament in a United States of Dramerica polo shirt or hat?
I'd prefer it. Right. I would love to. Well, then, I'll send you a whiskey after, just after a good finish.
That'd be brilliant. That'd be quite, you could be the first golfer sponsored by a podcast on the on the tour. There you go.
Then when we're traveling, all the other guys out there will just all shoot them onto the podcast and let you hear their weird story. There's some weird stories. People walking into the clubhouse in their pajamas after sleeping on the car in the car.
Is that right?
It's funny.
So obviously we've talked about the, if it doesn't work and you've got to go back and tell everyone it doesn't work. Obviously if it does work, I guess it's a funny thing, because then you'll start, the first money you make is presumably, because of the way the thing's structured, is cutting checks to various people who backed you, and then you get to keep, I mean, obviously that's the whole point of this, but is it, I know this is a theoretical question, but writing checks to 35 people after a win, in some weird way, is that going to be actually nicer than keeping the money in the sense of, you know, repaying faith?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's a better way to say thank you in that sense. You know, I mean, I can sit here and say the reason why I'm doing this, I love golf so much. And at this point in time, yes, money is important, but the amount isn't extremely important at this time. You know, I want to get people their money and just express my gratitude for, you know, helping and believing, right? And nothing would be more fun to sit down and have a whiskey with you after a year of really good play, you know, and just be kind of that team aspect, right? That's the fun part about it. The way I'm going about it, bringing personal relationships into it, can be a very fun and beneficial and entertaining thing for both sides. You know, it's all fun, you know, winning and all that, but it's really cool being able to share it with people.
So how is there going to be like a sort of, you're going to write a newsletter to everyone once a week or just send out an email? How are you going to, you're not going to be on TV. So how are we going to know how you're getting on?
Yeah. So I've started a website. I'll have that finished here this week, where I'll be updating a schedule. I'll be updating newsletters. People can ask questions, you know. And hopefully when they listen to this, they might be able to ask some unique questions. Like, what's the funniest thing you've seen on the mini tours? What's like, because there's a lot. It can be entertaining, right? But it's also cool because even through me, I can tell you, oh, I played with so-and-so, right? And he's playing well on tour this week. Just lots of stories. But also with me, I'll just be updating about my game, what I'm doing. You know, I saw my coach this past week. This is what we're working on. Some expectations right now in the near future, all of that. I want everyone to kind of know what it's like to be doing this. That's part of it, right? It's a very unique style. It's not like other professional sports. This isn't glitz and glamour. This is get to work, and it's not pretty for a while, but I think that's really part of the fun. You know, I think that's what makes it cool.
So what is the funniest thing you've seen on mini tour?
probably the guy. So there was one event when I was walking up to warm up, and this guy had, I'm pretty sure he drove like 15 hours straight, and he was getting in and he was wearing his like plaid pajama pants. And I'm telling you, he looks sick. Like he's been like driving through the night, looks awful. I didn't even know who the guy was. Gets changed, coming out. I'm like, that's that same guy, shot like 60 and won the event. And I was just like, it's just such a weird concept. Like they don't have anywhere to change. They had to go in the clubhouse. Yeah. It's funny. It's funny. And you know, that guy may be worth $12 million now. I should go look.
Yeah. So what does success look like? Obviously, you know, there's always that chance that it's not impossible that you will make a cut on a PGA Tour event this year. Although it's entirely possible that you won't even get into the field for one as well. But sure. Like, realistically, what at the end of the year, what do you want to have achieved and what would count as success?
Year one, trending the right way the whole season, right? There might be a couple of rough turns, but there might be some really good ones. But overall, you know, outside of the money perspective, is learn a lot, continue to form my game for that professional level, learn to differentiate the mini tours from the big tour, right? Like I've been saying, there's people that can play one or the other, but the guy sometimes who can play on the PGA Tour doesn't get a chance because, you know, you still got to step up early. So I'm really forming my game to both levels. I think I'm more of a hard golf course type guy. But in that way, you know, I'm forming my game right now, my mentality to play on the minis. And I think that's going to be very beneficial. So at the end of the year, being able to look back and know I've grown on both aspects, playing hard golf course, easy golf course, being able to adapt to the mindset, you know, of this each event will be everything. I think that's something, if I can get that, you know, better and better throughout the year, I don't see many obstacles moving forward, just with all the preparation I've been doing in the last few years.
So who's the, this is such a lazy question, but I'm interested, so I'm going to ask it anyway. Who's the most well-known golfer that you've played with or against?
Most well-known golfer I've played with. I've hit balls with Arnold Palmer. That was cool.
That counts.
Yeah, I've hit balls with Arnold Palmer. I've played with a lot of guys on the PGA Tour, but when you're going against Arnold Palmer, they're not that interesting.
tell me about Arnold Palmer. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I was just in high school and was in Orlando and went to Bay Hill. My dad, my brother, and I, it was kind of a bucket list trip, and they had this. They had some special going on. It was actually the week after Tiger Woods won, I think his last time at Bay Hill. The scoreboards were up, the grandstands were up. They had some sort of deal the week after. And we were out there, and our caddy, so you have to have caddies out there. And he was great. He was awesome. And I mean, I was a kid and I saw Arnold Palmer on the range and I was so nervous, right? Like, it's just like, you don't want to bother him. It's his place. Like, you don't want to annoy Arnold Palmer. And our caddy's like, no, it's fine. Go up and talk to him. And I go up to him, and my dad, my brother, and I, we say hello, and he actually offers, like, would you like a picture? Would you like a picture? And as we're taking the picture, he goes, it's okay, water's fine, as if he wanted us to give him a drink or something. And but then after that, he's like, why don't you come hit some balls, you know, over by me? And the coolest thing, and such a testament to Arnold Palmer, right? The stories you hear about him being a stand-up guy, it was so cool to be able to live it. And no, like, everything you hear, it's like, that's the truth. You know, he's a stand-up guy. It was the coolest.
Did he give you any tips on your swing?
No, he was pretty old then, but I'm pretty sure he was like, I think he was still like a 5 handicap. And he was like, I don't know if he was 80 years old yet, or, but he could stripe it. But I asked mentality, and the thing that, you know, his motto is, the only thing he gave me was go for it. He's a super aggressive player. Just go for it, you know, all the time. I think the closest thing to him in the modern day is Phil Mickelson. Yeah. Go for everything.
So how old were you when you took up golf?
As soon as I could walk. I had tendonitis in my thumb when I was like 1.5 years old or 2 years old from like swinging a plastic club all the time. Wow. Yeah, I don't remember that, but my family tells me.
So does your old man play?
Yeah. Yeah. My whole family, my whole dad's side of the family are golfers. They love it. Grew up playing.
So at what point did you become better than your dad and your siblings?
Oh, they're not that good. My dad, they just like, they love playing, but it was pretty early. Maybe when I was around 10, 8, 9, 10. I think when I was 10, the first time I broke 80. Shot 79 when I was like 10. So I think that was my big breakthrough.
Extraordinary. Yeah, I'm still waiting. So, so what? Because obviously, I know that obviously the handicap system becomes a bit irrelevant once you become a professional. Because you know, but technically, what is your handicap?
So when I was done in high school, in a senior high school, and I really kept track of the handicap, I was a +5, so 5 better than scratch.
Yeah.
So yeah, now I'm definitely better now than I was then. It's a lot different in how you monitor success, as like you said, it's handicaps are kind of irrelevant at this point, but I would say, you know, +6, +7 when it's all, you know, if we're just out playing for fun, especially, it's a little different life there. Yeah. Have a whiskey and play.
Yeah, no, dude. So I hadn't played since the summer of 2019. Partly because of the pandemic and partly because I didn't have a chance to play. I played again 2 weeks ago in a scramble, which is my best format, because I'm not a great golfer, but I can always contribute. And it was just such an amazing feeling to be out on the golf course. And one of the guys we were playing with, who's a whiskey ambassador, is I think he's a 5 handicapper. So, you know, he's a serious, a good golfer. Totally. But I think across the course of the round, we drank a 21-year-old, I think a 14-year-old. We had probably 4 or 5 whiskeys, because when you play golf with whiskey ambassadors, you do. And it doesn't hurt my game. But then, you know, there's
no juice.
You can't get a lot worse. So presumably, do we have to reassure people that if anyone listening thinking, well, maybe I'll invest in Will Leaf this year. Actually, sorry, to be clear, it's not just this year, is it? It's a 4-year program. That's the plan.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's a mutual agreement, you know. It's a 4-year plan. I think that is all that is projections of you know, with no big spikes or just kind of a very, very realistic path, if that makes sense. You have to project something, right? But hopefully it's year one that I make it. But if not, give a little time for someone to learn and get the feel for things.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do we need to reassure our listeners that if they were to invest, you're not, just because you're on a whiskey podcast, that doesn't mean you're going to be drinking whiskey every night or on the course. You will be taking this seriously.
I'm someone you actually don't have to worry about that. I enjoy having one, but golf becomes my life when it's time to do that.
So look, just before we get on to the last question, I get like a sort of serious, like, why there, so you're not the only person who's looking for investment in a golfer. There are, at the level you're playing at, obviously you're a very, very good golfer, but you're competing against scores, maybe hundreds of people who are also very, very good golfers who are trying to get to this level. Why do you think you can make it?
So I've always felt the honest answer is talent's not the issue. And knowledge, I'm a very smart golfer. I've been able to think my way through the last couple of years and improve and form a game for the professional level. I'm a thinker, you know, I like to a realist thinker and figure out why I'm not out there and tirelessly work at that, which I think is a quality that is very, very important. Being able to look at yourself honestly, of why you're not playing the best or why you're not out there and attacking that. Right. And, I think that's probably my best quality. But why the PGA Tour is, ball striking for sure. I think I could go out there right now, and look the part, from a ball striking perspective. I think there is a little bit of evolving in consistency and scoring and just knowing that lifestyle. That's what people don't understand. That's why there's so many people doing it. There's a lot of people that are good enough to play. But adapting to that lifestyle that we've been talking about on this podcast, that does maybe require a little time, right? And to require how to build a schedule to optimize your performance. But yeah, skill-wise, I do believe in my abilities. Otherwise, I definitely wouldn't be trying. Ball striking, I'm excited to take that out there for a full schedule.
Very good. Super. Look, last question, Will. We ask every guest, as I think you know, mm-hmm. if you could drink any whiskey with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be, what would it be, and where would it be?
Well, nothing fancy. Probably just a little like Woodford Reserve with Tiger Woods in two settings, either at Augusta National or in some sort of private setting where he felt relaxed after maybe like four whiskeys. And I would love to ask him and get some honest, honest answers about his life. I think it would be very, very interesting in so many ways. Just his actual experience playing golf. Hard to get to know what's going on in that head. But from a mental perspective, obviously he's the strongest ever to play the game. And it would just be very interesting to hear him open up and be honest.
Yeah, very good. Look, Will, thank you very much for being part of the podcast. The very best of luck, first of all, with raising the finances to make it work. And then obviously once you do, with getting out there and justifying people's investments in you. So I wish you the very best of luck, and we'll keep an eye out for you, hopefully, because you'll be wearing our branded merchandise.
So, there it is. Thank you so much. Appreciate having me on.
I love scotch. Scotch. Scotch.
And don't forget to not just follow us on Twitter and Instagram at US of Dramerica, but also ask us questions and comment and say nice things.
And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if the mood takes you, you can leave us a review, as feedback is always welcome.
And drink whiskey. Slán tír.